The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 25th of February, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Brian Larkin, Chief Executive Officer of United Oil and Gas. That's UOG. And Brian explains the results of the Coulter well so far and covers other parts of their business. Plus, I also have Rob Proctor, Chief Executive Officer of Audio Boom. That's B-O-O-M, ticker there. And Rob explains how their $1.5 million fundraise will help them generate higher revenues throughout 2019 and beyond. Also on the podcast, Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive of Rhea Bold Resources, also describes the results of the Coulter well and why they've increased their investment in operator Corallian Energy. And as it's a Monday, Malky's here talking about the following oil and gas stocks: President Energy, that's PPC, Rock Rose Energy, Rhea Bold Resources, United Oil and Gas, Hurricane Energy, and Bahamas Petroleum. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk, but anyway, top 10 versions of these lists, and also lots of other content around blogs and podcasts and videos, so check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Brian Larkin, Chief Executive Officer of United Oil and Gas. UOG is the ticker there. Brian, thanks for coming on.
You're welcome, Justin.
You've had some decent news out, but it's surprising news. It wasn't news expected in Coulter, and we'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, Brian, I know you're not a one-trick pony by any means. You've got a lot in the portfolio, so just give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please.
Yeah, certainly. We're United Oil and Gas, as you mentioned. We are a former Total Oil team, a reasonably new company. The company was established 3.5 years ago, and we listed about a year ago. Our strategy is kind of dual-focused. It's a low-risk business in Europe, coupled with a high-impact exploration business outside of Europe. And that strategy really falls out of our Tullow DNA, which means that we essentially look at areas and we want to build a business in areas that are known to us from our experience during our time with Tullow.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Coulter, the appraisal well results, because you've gone in there and you've gone for a certain target and you've found another target by the looks of it. So, I mean, there's a bit of confusion as to this, but tell us about it and what's your take on it, Brian?
Yeah, well, I think when anything is a surprise, it can be confusing, and I can understand that. But essentially what has happened here is the fault was larger than what we had planned pre-drill, or that we had identified pre-drill. And like a lot of these things, Justin, you de-risk as much as you can to understand what you're drilling into, but you don't really know until you've actually drilled it. Now, we always said Colt was a low risk opportunity, and it absolutely is, but what has actually transpired here is that the fault was larger than anticipated, and we had quite a lot of oil and gas shows during drilling, which encouraged us to keep drilling. And what happened was we landed on a brand new discovery, which we're calling Coulter South, that has potentially 15 million barrels of oil recoverable. And if you go back to what we said pre-drill, anything north of 4 million barrels recoverable would be quite a huge success for our shareholders. So what this gives us is, it gives us Coulter South, and we have decided to drill into what we're calling Coulter North, which was the original Coulter prospect. We're sidetracking into that, and we should commence that sidetrack in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, so when you started having these finds, it was deliberate to drill that way, was it?
Well, We always knew that there was potentially a deeper discovery there. We always had suspected that, and Corallian had done a lot of pre-drill work in that regard. And what we hadn't anticipated, I think it would be fair to say that the fault would be quite as big. But again, you can't really, that was always the technical risk with Coulter. But you know, we've had a fantastic result. It's a great day for our shareholders. It's a fantastic result for us. We're very happy. We've got Coulter South, and we still have to drill Coulter North.
Yeah, and so so at the moment, it's like a bonus. You still have that, you know, that everyone sort of got excited about. You still have that, still there, and the technicals are still the same, the chance of success still the same, but now you've found a bonus sort of discovery, which is... And do you have any idea what the plans are for that yet?
Not yet. It'd be too early to say. What we want to do is drill Coulter North and then evaluate the two. We'll have more learnings after we drill Coulter North as well. So I think that at this stage, you know, what we need to do, and I'm a little bit limited as what I can say because we are drilling still.
Yeah.
But what we would do at this stage is we would piece together Coulter South with Coulter North, and then decide or agree a way forward with our joint venture partners. But it's an excellent result, Justin. This is a great result for our shareholders.
Yeah, and that's what's confusing. It's like you say, when you go for a certain result and then all of a sudden a surprise comes up, even if it's a positive surprise, people are confused by it. And so yes. I think that's why people don't know what's going on there. So, but you are... This is exceed expectations as yet?
Well, I'd like to see what the final number is before I... Before I'd say that, I'd like to see the result of both put together before I'd say if it's exceeded our pre-drill expectations or not. But, you know, the nature of the industry can be like this sometimes. You know, quite often you get more than you anticipated, or sometimes you get less than you anticipated. And, you know, so far the result of Coulter, the results we've encountered so far are really, really encouraging. So, we're really, really happy. It's a really, really, really good result for our shareholders. I'm really pleased.
Yeah, okay. Now, at the moment, I say it's quite a cautious environment, small-cap investing, and we had a big sell-off last year. And I think that's the way the market is at the moment. And you released some good news on Jamaica. Your CPR figures came out, and yet share price didn't react positively. So take us through those numbers and what you think, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, we commissioned, as you know, we commissioned a CPR in Jamaica. We commissioned CPRs across our entire portfolio at the tail end of last year. We announced the Jamaica one last week. And really encouragingly, the potential size of Calibri, which is the first target, one of potentially 20 targets, I must add, has increased by 10%. So we've gone from 200 million barrels recoverable to potentially 220 million barrels recoverable, which is quite a significant move, because when our original assessment of Jamaica was based on 2D seismic. As you know, we've completed the first ever 3D seismic acquisition offshore Jamaica during the summer, which was on time and under budget, which is crucially important. But the result of that 3D pack, then what you're hoping to see is the Calibri structure, firstly, still exist, and stay within the same size parameters. And what tends to happen is a good result would normally be that Calibri would still exist, but would be marginally smaller. And in this instance, what's actually happened is Calibri still exists, and it's 10% bigger. So it's been a fantastic result in Jamaica. And what this document, the CPR document, does is it really strengthens the case for a potential farm in Jamaica. And there's a number of interested parties, super majors, that are currently looking at the opportunity. So we're hopeful that we will have a farm down in Jamaica sometime soon, and we can move that forward.
Yeah, that's really... Take us through other parts of the portfolio. What's happening there, Brian?
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on across the entire portfolio and the entire asset base. Crown, we're continuing to do a lot of desktop work to de-risk Crown further. Part of that was a CPO, which we announced, I think, about 3 or 4 weeks ago now. And we have quite a lot of interest in Crown, and we have had some firm expressions of interest. But at this stage, it makes more sense for us to de-risk that ourselves at our desks before we consider accepting or moving forward any one offer. I think we could create a lot more value ourselves first and get a real handle and understanding of Crown before we jump into a joint venture on that one. Yeah. On Selva, there was a lot of commentary recently about the changes in Italian legislation. It doesn't impact upon our production concession. We're still on track to have production from Selva in 2020. Most of, if not all, of our exploration targets are also contained within that concession. So it might hold us up a little bit on the exploration, but not significantly or materially. We should still crack on as planned with production from Selva in 2020. on Watercross, potential well later this year. I've been working closely with our joint venture partners there to continue to de-risk Watercross. So we're hopeful of drilling essentially what will be a redevelopment well later this year. Watercross was a field that was it. Production and it's currently a shut-in field, and what we've done over the last year or so is try to understand why it needed to be shut in, and it was really to work up, but to try and understand that a little bit further before we go back and drill it. And I think we're now in a position to start working that up for a target and maybe second half of this year. Then we've spoken about Jamaica and Calabria, and again I think it's just worth pointing out on Calabria that it is Jamaica, that the CPR is over one target. There's potentially 20 more within that acreage. So it's exciting. And, you know, we're always looking at new opportunities, which to add to the portfolio. And if you think about it, if you think in terms of the property analogy and the way I've explained United Oil and Gas in the past to non-technical investors is, United really is, it's almost a property play in terms of our portfolio. It's getting on the lower levels of the property ladder and adding some value, and moving on, selling and buying a bigger place, adding more value, selling, moving on. And we've all reinvesting that cash in the business at each time. So we've always used the property analogy to describe United, and we're continuously looking for new opportunities to add to the portfolio. We'll complete an AIM move at the end of this week, I hope, and that will arm us with paper. It'll make transactions, acquisitions easier for us. We can use our paper a little bit easier than we could on a previous listing. So, you know, we're excited about the potential M&A activity across the business and opportunities that we're seeing. We feel we're very strongly placed to be able to structure those as well. We're not looking for cash. And I think that's an important point to add. We were offered cash last year, which we took. We haven't been offered cash this year to date. We're not financing. We're not looking for money. We're well cashed up. There's no placing planned. We are looking at opportunities, but we want to structure those quite cleverly using paper, potentially offtake financing and even debt, because our priority would be adding a production deal into the portfolio.
Yeah, and you are now sort of spread across, you know, like I said, yeah, the production, you know, appraisal, high impact exploration. But going back to Colt, just final word on that. I mean, are you now more sort of positive on this now than you were beforehand, or less?
Without question, we're more positive. Without question, we're very happy with the result. We're very, very happy with the result. I think you're right. I don't think the market has fully understood it. But, you know, sometimes that's, as I said, sometimes that's the nature of the beast. You know, you have you know, a pre-drill expectation, and what we've got is slightly, as well, it's quite a bit different than what we our pre-drill expectation was. But it's nonetheless a great story for us, and I'm personally very pleased with the result that we've encountered, as is the rest of our joint venture partners. And I must also say, Carleen has done an excellent job as operator.
Yeah, excellent. Go on, by three reasons. If you can keep it to three, if someone's listening to this and not following you as yet, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I'll start with our team. We have a very strong team. Nearly all of us are formerly of Tullow. We've done quite a lot together in the last 12 months in terms of building the company, adding to the portfolio base. The second reason is anticipated news flow, not only just from Coulter North now, but also across the rest of the portfolio over the next weeks and months. And thirdly is our growth plans for the business over the next 12 to 18 months. Should see United, what we want to do, Justin, is take United out of the micro cap leagues, move us up the leagues, and we're determined and committed to doing that as quickly as we can, and create as much value as we possibly can for our shareholders in our share price.
Absolutely. Brian, good to chat to you, and like I say, a couple of weeks until we get the next bit of news from Coulter, so hopefully we'll be catching up then. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Rob Proctor, Chief Executive Officer of Audio Boom. Ticker there is BOOM. Boom. Rob, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good to be with you, Justin. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. And we for some reason, we didn't catch up after the last trading update you did, but we'll touch on that now because it was an excellent improvement. While stock markets were heading south, it seems like your last quarter was going north, which is, yeah, it was very good.
Okay.
Before we do, Rob, I do this, and you did laugh once. I always remember this, but people out there are new to the podcast. They don't, maybe not familiar with the audio boom. So just explain quickly, what's the business all about, please?
Yeah, so I think it would be fair to say that our models kind of evolved as podcasting's evolved over the last 4 years. But in essence, Audio Boom now makes podcast content and we sell advertising. That's what we do. We've got great technology. We've got amazing distribution with Apple and Google and all of those guys and Spotify. And we've just, upgraded our agreements with Spotify. So, it's a huge relationship for us. But in essence, we make great content and we sell advertising. That's what we do in podcasting.
Yeah, it's a very hot space, of course. And now you've announced today you're raising some money. What's the money for? Because in the last trading update, it did suggest you'll break even there. So what's the money for then, Rob?
Yeah, so I think, cash in bank, if you like, has been pretty much static for the last 6 months, which is obviously very encouraging. Q4 was amazing, where we, repaired a lot of the damage that was earlier in the year. That's now well behind us at this point. And Q1's looking tremendous, I have to say. And all of this money, really, it's, I guess you'd call it a growth funding round. Because of the model in podcasting, where to bring the biggest podcasters onto your platform, you're paying upfront payment for minimum guarantees of revenue that would come off of the advertising sales. We pay those upfront. We recoup all of those directly from those media revenues before we start doing the revenue share with the podcaster. But there is a need to have, if you like, that pool of money where we can go in and we can negotiate with the biggest and the best podcasters to bring them on. So this money is going directly to that. We have a number of deals that are now negotiated. The deals are done. There is a need for us to be able to come forward with that upfront payments. And, they could have a significant impact on our revenues for this coming year. In fact, already, and you've seen it in the announcement today, after just 8 weeks of the year, our advertising revenues plus subscription and our programmatic revenues for the year, we now have more book revenue for 2019 after 8 weeks than we did for the whole of 2018.
Wow. So that's 11.7 million, was it? Show.
11.7 million last year. We're already booking and we're ahead of that number. So 2019 is going to be a strong year for us. This fundraise will put us in a tremendous position to pick up, or actually just to pay for now, those podcasts that are already negotiated. My problem now is I've actually got too many advertisers for the inventory that I've got on platform. So our top 10 shows in the UK and the US were over 80% sold out on those shows for the whole of 2019. So I need to sign these deals that we've negotiated to give me that inventory because we've already got the advertisers. So this 1.5 million is going to allow me to really step forward and get those signed. And then that literally, the snowball will roll from there because we're getting offered opportunities all the time now because, I don't know if you've noticed, but, over all of the last trading updates, our effective CPM or what we charge for every 1,000 adverts, I think in Q1 17, that was, it was about $7.80 per 1,000 adverts served. In December of 2018, that was up to $25 a thousand.
Yeah.
So the advertisers are strong, the rates are going up, our sell-through rate is going through the roof. We just need more inventory, and that's what this money allows us to go out and get.
Yeah, and I suppose as you generate cash and you have more cash, you can attract bigger talent, so it's self-fueling, I suppose, isn't it?
It does, and some of the deals that we've just negotiated now that this money will go towards are our marquee names and creators within our industry. As soon as we announce those, for definite, our deal flow will increase even faster. So we're just a tremendous position right now. The guys have done an amazing job in the UK and the US. As you saw in the last announcement, you know, Vogue is re-signing for F1. The Economist has just signed a huge deal with us all the way through into 2020, actually, for a couple of our biggest shows. We're in good shape. So now it's about the inventory. This money allows us to get more of that inventory.
Yeah, you've mentioned that you've signed and done deals with people. I mean, are there any people we would know or you can say about or what?
Well, the ones we've negotiated, obviously, we haven't put the ink on the contract yet because obviously there's a need for us to pay that money. So they're not in the public domain right now, but deals like the ones with Studio 71, who are, you know, the biggest YouTube channel owner in the world, we're rolling out a slate of up to 8 podcasts with them next year. That deal was announced previously. I don't think we put a lot of colour around it, but that's a huge deal for us. Formula One for this coming season. SBI Audio, which is Starburst, which is, again, another big TV stroke video player that's now coming into the podcast space. And then we've got just, you know, classic podcasts like Jonathan Ross. We're just rolling out a ton of them all the time, mate.
Yeah. So the big question is here, I mean, you said you operate in cash flow break even in the final 3 months of 2018. So I'm assuming now with the impressive sort of start of the year you have, you'll start generating cash. Is that right? You're cash flow positive?
Yeah. I mean, again, you look at the money that's in there, and because of the model, is, would you say, is that money that we're paying out forward? I guess it comes down to accountancy ease, I suppose. But you could see that as being part of our cash flow. So that affects our cash flow because we have money going out and it takes 4 months for that money to come in on the revenue share. So towards the back end of this year, if our growth is going exactly the way we're seeing it at the moment, like I say, we're ahead of 2018 already after only 8 weeks in 19. So we're going to be in amazing shape by the end of 2019.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know that a while back Spotify announced they're getting more into podcasting. So there's more money to be made. Cause apparently, with music, you have to pay artists a lot of money. So, and apparently, they're acquiring companies. Have they been talking to you, Rob?
All over the place.
Yeah.
we have a really, really strong relationship with the guys at Spotify. As I say, we just kind of tightened up some of the terms that we work with them. It's a long-range deal. It's a far-reaching deal. Pretty much all of our content is available to go onto Spotify, and we're working with the library to get it up there right now. I think more and more of the content that we're making, the Audio Boom Originals Network, that's a strong piece of our business when we're talking and working with Spotify. They obviously are keen on acquiring companies and acquiring content that adds to their library on kind of an exclusive basis inside Spotify. So I think for us, I put this within the realms of AIM, I think for us it's a relationship that is only going to grow and get stronger and closer over the short to long term period.
Yeah, and generally, you know, podcasting now, so it's been hot for a while. Is this going to continue?
Oh, mate, I really genuinely think this thing's actually going to spiral from now. I think we've scratched the surface up until this point. A couple of reasons for that. One is, you know, Apple put on the native podcast player onto the iPhone 3 years ago. That in and of itself has doubled the market. Mm-hmm. Spotify's come in, really only just started. It now accounts for over 15% of our total listens, and they've just started. That's going to grow the market massively. Google has just put the podcast player natively onto Android phones. So given that Android outsells Apple 5-1 around the world, and when Apple did that, it doubled the market. Mm-hmm. With Android doing it, what's that going to do to the market over the next 2 years?
Yeah.
And then you've obviously got digital voice assistants like Alexa and all of that. You know, people are searching for stuff. Voice only, no keyboard, no screen. The content has to be delivered back in audio only. we're sitting on a massive library of audio-only content that can be delivered into digital home systems. So there's all of that technological growth that's happening. Yeah. You've got so much money coming into the industry at the moment that talent is flowing in behind it. So the depth and breadth and quality of content that's being produced now compared to 3 years ago is off the scale. Mm-hmm. That's only going to accelerate over the next 3 years. And the more better content you've got, the more people will start listening to it as a channel. So you've got money, you've got quality of content, and you've got technological advances all working together. I personally think this business and this industry is going to at least double or treble over the next 2 or 3 years. So I don't see any sign of that growth slowing down at all at this point.
Yeah, but you know what? I've got to say, about a year and a half ago, you mentioned the smart speakers. Now, that will have an effect. And at the time, I was skeptical. And then we had one for Christmas. I don't know if I bought my wife one right. About a year ago. And I've got to say, we do a lot of listening to that. And it does transform our sort of, you know, what we listen to. And, you know, I listen to podcasts on there and music on there. But a year and a half ago, I was skeptical when you said that. But it has transformed the way people listen now, isn't it, to stuff, you know, content?
It definitely does. But I think the other area that people really haven't thought about right now is actually smart TVs as well. Mm-hmm. and video subscription services like Netflix. Mm. You know, who's to say that certain companies aren't going to be working with Netflix in the very near future to put podcasting onto their content services in there? So you can just put your TV on if you don't want to watch a show because you're doing something. You maybe could just listen to a podcast through Netflix on your telly.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, Rob, well, listen, three reasons. If someone's listening to this, why, and they're not following the story yet, three reasons why they should hit that button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, well, I mean, we are, and I've been saying it for 2 or 3 years, and, you know, I know everything takes time, and you've got to build business and growth, and, you know, I think by market standards, we seem to have been slow. We're in the fastest growing sector in digital industry right now, worldwide, no doubt. We've paid it forward and we've laid the foundations. We're in an awesome position. I think when you look at Spotify's acquisition of Gimlet, who, you know, are pretty similar to Audio Boom in the revenue side, although, you know, rumor has it they burn way, way more cash than we do. Spotify paid $230 million for them. They just bought Anchor, who have no revenues and all burn, and 80% of their podcasts have had zero listens. They just paid $130 million for them. I think at our current stock price, we're worth about $25 million. And, you know, we're in the top six podcast companies in the world. So, you know, people may have become disenfranchised or jaundiced with Audio Boom and the story and all of that because of the markets and the scale of our growth. We are in an amazing position and are now proving that through our revenues and through our content and all of our KPIs. We grow on a month-to-month basis across all different elements of our business. So, you know, and I think our market cap in relation to what people are paying to buy similar, if not as good business as ours is in the market, is, I mean, quite frankly, a joke where we sit today compared to what's being paid out in the market right now.
Marvellous stuff. Rob, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I hope so. Thank you much indeed, Justin. Brilliant.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rhea Bold Resources. RBD is the ticker there. Sachin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me, Justin.
Yeah, you had some good news this morning, and I think thankful amongst a lot of private investors who like oil and gas stocks, because there's been a few disappointments of late in that sector, so some good news, but it's not straightforward as you thought, so you can explain what's happened in a bit. Before we do, as always, if someone's tuning in for the first time or are not familiar with the company, could you just briefly summarise what you're about at Rhea Bold, please, Sachin?
Yeah, Rhea Bold Resources is an AIM-listed oil and gas company, and the strategy of the company is to target low technical risk projects by providing the funding that gets that project drilled And after success, the project can be monetized relatively quickly thereafter, providing, you know, significant exposure to the upside to our shareholders. And that's what Rehobold's about. That's the strategy we've rolled out over the past 18 months, and one that has led to a very active drilling campaign, of which this Coulter well is one.
Excellent. Well, exactly. Well, let's go into this Coulter well and explain what happened, what you're hoping to achieve there, and what actually happened, please, if you could.
Sure. So we were targeting the Coulter accumulation, and that's north of where this Coulter South discovery that was made, which we announced in the RNS. And Justin, you asked just to provide clarification associated with this discovery, estimated to have a P mean of 15 million barrels of oil, mm-hmm. As estimated by Corallian Energy, the operator of the well. So relatively early on, we realized that we were in the south part of the fault block or the fault terrace. And the decision was actively taken while drilling to go and drill into the South Sherwood Sandstone. And that was for two objectives. The first was to then allow a better correlation of the Sherwood Sandstone horizon on the north part of the fault, because that's the bit that's where the Coulter field is located, in the north terrace. Mm-hmm. And in the south, we also hoped that there would be an oil accumulation, as there was a previous well there that had determined an oil water contact. Fortunately, when we drilled into the south, we did find 9 meters of pay, over 9 meters of pay that was logged and shared a common oil water contact with that previous well. And that's what allowed the de-risking of the Coulter South discovery and the de-risking of that PME number that I mentioned. So we knew if we were going to sidetrack and deviate the well, probably the best thing to do was to actually target that south fault, the South Sherwood Sandstone location, for the better well correlation, the better seismic correlation in the north part of the block. That's what we're doing now, and we're very much looking forward to the results of Coulter.
So, yeah, like I say, it wasn't a straightforward result as people were expecting. So obviously, the share price has gone up. People are seeing this as positive. What's your take on it? I mean, how positive is this?
Well, it's very positive in my view, because it is clearly indicating that the 15 million barrels here, which should be very similar economics to the ones that we have provided in the past on Coulter itself, and no reason at this stage to think it would be any different, means that these are extremely economic and valuable barrels. So that's the first thing, just on Coulter South itself. But there's a second broader point to make as well, which is essentially, if you drill into this basin and you get a trapping configuration, the Sherwood Sandstone being quite ubiquitous in the region means you will get an accumulation of hydrocarbons that is very likely to be economic, because this is a prolific basin. So there's that second broader element that I'd like to just highlight as well. I know we're focused just on the drilling results of these two targets, but there is that upside associated with the license area that is very encouraging for the medium and long-term view.
Yeah. And so just explain now, so what are you, it's taking, you're going to be 2 weeks, is that right, to complete this drill now, sidetrack?
That's right. So we're going to spend 2 weeks drilling the sidetrack to go into the original Coulter target.
Yeah.
That will allow us to provide the barrels associated with Coulter, which we can clearly aggregate with Coulter South as well. So we feel that with any success at Coulter, we will have an extremely attractive asset and project to take forward here.
Yeah, and so now, does this sort of, you know, the South discovery here, or you know, the fact that you've mapped out this data and you've found this column there, does that give you more confidence in your primary target?
It certainly does. It certainly does from the point of view of all of the aspects of risk characteristics and risk parameters associated with any oil and gas field. The one thing to say is part of the reason why we were finding it difficult to stay on the right side of the fault is that seismic imaging is a little bit difficult here. So the important data point that we now have that's given us greater certainty is the correlation of the seismic data as into where the top of the Sherwood sandstone is on the north side of this fault. So yes, is the answer, is the short answer to your question. We have greater confidence and certainty around that now.
I mean, I've seen some people on social media saying, you've learned, these are cynics, I assume don't hold shares, are saying that, I don't see why this is so good. You've learned nothing new from this. But have you learned something new from this?
Oh, absolutely. We've learned something new, just because at this location, at the cul-de-sac, it was not known that we would have pay in our fault block. So these are potentially commercial volumes that we could convert into a development project as part of the Coulter North, as part of the main Coulter discovery. So to say that we haven't learned something new, I think would be a very pessimistic view of this exciting data that we've got from Coulter South.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you've invested further into Corallian, yeah?
That's right. So because we now have to do the sidetrack, the overall cost of the operations had increased, and Corallian as operator needed to be funded in order to do that. Rehobald being a fully funded entity, and because of the strategy that we embarked on, we were able at very short notice to provide that equity and essentially get this upside exposure with extremely, at a discount, if you like. And that was after knowing we had made this discovery at Coulter South. So we believe this is extremely favorable for the Rehobald shareholder and gives them this added upside potential because we were able to act quickly and decisively on the success at Coulter South.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Now, I'm assuming, looking forward, your next big milestone, I know you've got a lot going on, but surely it's not sooner than 2 weeks. So I assume Coulter, the results from this would be the next big milestone, is it?
Oh, Justin, that's a tricky one. Because our activity is so significant in the Rehobald portfolio, it's sometimes difficult to time what's going to come next. So I'll give a little bit of a timeline so that that your listeners are aware. Clearly, as you said, we have this two-week period to hit the target at Coulter. But, you know, it always takes a little bit of time to do the analysis on what we have there. But what we'll also be running hot on the heels of that will be the spudding of the Burnett well in California. And it is because that well is such a short time for drilling, we might well have the results out of California ahead of the results that we have at Coulter South. At Coulter. So what that means in terms of news flow is difficult to know, but they'll be very, very close to each other. And soon after that, we have a series of other wells that will be coming up, and on any further success in California, we'll clearly be filling the hopper with further opportunities there too.
Marvellous stuff. Well, as normal, Sachin, if you could, if someone's liking the sound of this but not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Certainly, Justin. So far today, Rehobald has now drilled or is drilling four wells. We've demonstrated three successes, two of which are already on production or demonstrating production, as is the case in California, and this one here in Coulter. And we have a further set of near-term activity coming up, as I mentioned, in California, but also in East Yorkshire through Rathlin and in Danube Petroleum with a well in Romania. And all of that is near-term drilling activity that we feel we can monetize soon after the successful events that we anticipate having there. So that's the first point. We have a lot of activity. And the second point is that we feel we can monetize these assets pretty quickly after successful drilling. The third point is that we only highlight the things that we have funded and defined in the portfolio right now, but within the existing investee companies that we have made investments, there are further projects that we can pursue, as well as further investments that we can make outside the project portfolio that we're actively looking at to carry on delivering this shareholder creation that we believe we're demonstrating to our Rehobald investors.
Marvellous stuff. Sachin, good to chat to you. And I know we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Justin, and looking forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Malky, oil and gas sector specialist. You all right, Malky?
Yeah, I'm very well indeed, thanks. And yourself?
Yes, I'm good. It's been a you know, busy day today, but quite a bit of news on oil and gas stocks, especially in the junior market, you know, so you've been keeping busy. So anyway, let's go through some of the stocks you're looking at. What's first up, Malky?
Yeah, it really has been absolutely mad this morning. And, you know, I know you speak to these guys already, but I've already spoken to Peter Levine at President and Andrew Austin at Rock Rose and Steve Williams at Rehbold. So it's been mad. And so we should talk about all those companies, really. So I guess President, which you and I have talked about a number of times. I know it's a very popular share in the... in the retail area, and the shares ran up during the last quarter of last year, which was when the oil price was coming down and most of the other shares were coming down. It didn't run up anything like enough, and the shares at 8.5p are absolutely ludicrously undervalued. I mean really this, you know, there's something horribly wrong with this, because you know they've increased their, you know, their percentage and their barrels per day and everything last year in significant amounts, and there is no way that is in the share price at all. I mean, if you look at what they did, you know, last year, that turnover was 160%, so they're turning over nearly $50 million a year, profits of $15 million a year, increased production to, you know, 3,300 barrels a day. Yeah, throwing off huge amount of net cash and so on. And so people might ask you, why are they actually raising money? If they're throwing off so much net cash, that why are they actually raising the money? And actually, it's a very sensible thing to do here, because they've got their cash being, you know, sort of effectively, it is all that the cash that they've done is already earmarked for some of the most, you know, important things which they did at the end of last year. But they've come to the conclusion that, particularly in the gas area of Rio Negro, which is one of their big acquisitions, they can fast track or turbocharge drilling some of those gas assets, which actually are now 19% of the group reserves, but only 3% of the group production. So actually what it'll do for you is see even more significant near-term production, I suspect, potential certainly to increase in that, and this is very wise. Also, they've got the ability to, I mean, with two or three very large shareholders, this is get the ability to bring in one or two new ones. And when I spoke to Peter Levine, he said that, you know, there's some very substantial funds looking to invest, which is what you want to do, and you want to bring more people in. I know that the existing shareholders very much want to stay in, but it's quite sensible, you know, to say, you know, we will come in if you want us to, but if you've got one or two other big institutions, then get them in as well, which is certainly what I would expect to happen. Peter Levine can pay down some of his debt and increase the amount of equity available in the market as well. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense, Justin. The shares, as I say, have done very, very little, but it will be, you know, it's a very wise move for them to do such a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it'd be interesting, because they're generating that kind of cash. It's it'd be interesting to see what when the results are out, and just look over, you know, what they've done there, because... seems very interesting play here. It's PPC, of course, President.
Yeah, I mean, you will find that, you know, sort of that significant increase in production at the end of last year meant that they've said, you know, in all those areas they're going to be doing further work, more drilling. It's not as if they're stopping it. They've announced some very substantial targets to increase, which, you know, most people wouldn't say put themselves down, you know, for such substantial. They've said that the 3,300 barrels a day will be 4,500 barrels a day this year. They're targeting 50% production growth in each of the next 3 years. which is substantial in itself, and that doesn't include obviously the gas that we're talking about funding here. You know, they've you know, they have really, you know, turbocharged this process big time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, PPC. What's next, Malky?
Well, it'd be wrong to not talk about Rock Rose, because, you know, indeed they have done the biggest deal of the day, in the sense that we're looking here at paying. They're buying out the whole of Marathon, the Marathon's interest in the North Sea and the west of Shetland, and they are paying $140 million for that. The interesting thing in terms of Rock Rose, you've noticed that the CEO of Rock Rose, chairman of Rock Rose, is Andrew Austin, has been buying production in the North Sea and in the Dutch sector over the last few years, and making, you know, highly successful, having a highly successful time of it, because, you know, what they've done is increased the production. He's now producing, you know, he's got a very, very serious production on his hands already, having just bought the Arran development, which is coming through. This will add something like 13,000 barrels a day of production, which effectively doubles it. We go to 24,000-25,000 barrels a day. So they'll go to something like 70 million barrels of oil. I mean, this is a very substantial one. I mean, it brings in, you know, people tend to worry about things like decommissioning, but Marathon are paying them $350 million cash up payment to do that. And for Bray, effectively this means that Rock Rose can move to another significant base, not just increasing the number of barrels or the barrels a day, but actually what they can do, they'll be able to expand this. I mean, they've taken on now for the first time operatorship, which they didn't want, well, they weren't going to do before until a deal came through that was perfect for it, and this is it. So they've got 200 or whatever it is people up in Aberdeen. Those people can now look at bigger assets to buy, and I would expect to see more from this company, and they are proving to be monstrously successful. The shares are suspended at £8. They're going to be suspended for about 3 months. They have to do this because it's been deemed by the market to be a reverse takeover, an RTO. Mm-hmm. So they can't come back until the deal is completed. But I would say expect it to be sometime in the early summer, about 3 months' time, I'd have thought. Very, very substantial deal by Andrew Austin, and Rock Rose is going to be, you know, very, very much wonderful. People use the word transformational too much, but this is definitely the size of it, the transformation, high quality assets, another great deal for Rock Rose.
Yeah, very interesting. RRE. Cool. What's next, Malky?
Well, and the next one we can't not talk about is Rheobold Resources and United Oil and Gas, who are both partners in the well, Coulter well, which has been announced this morning. And I haven't looked at all the share prices because there are one or two others in there as well. But this is the sort of ultimate irony, is that they're drilling an offshore well here, hoping to get into the Coulter field, which is off coast, the south coast of England, in Dorset, near Witch Farm. And actually, what they've done here is they've drilled effectively to the south of the fault that bounds the business. You want to drill as close to the fault as you can to get the most oil. But they've gone the wrong side of the fault, effectively. They missed the initial target. But ironically, the biggest irony is that having missed the target, they've gone to another area they would have done in due course, called Coulter South, and made a discovery.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty beneficial all round, because what they do is that they think they've got about 15 million barrels in this discovery, and then they can use the same well, the same rig and so on, just to do what's called a sidetrack. If they do the sidetrack, which only takes 2 or 3 weeks, they can effectively deviate the well and put it into where the area they were going to go into before. And assuming that that is a successful, which you can't make any assumptions about that thing. But they're effectively getting two birds for one, because you're into a position whereby, you know, you've got something going on. You've got 2 or 3 weeks. Now, Corallian, who are the operator here, who Rehobald have 40% of, are in a situation whereby they've got a shortage of cash, which Rehobald don't have. So Rehobald is investing £750,000 into Corallian because it needed to be announced. You know, they were talking about this over the weekend. They've got that at a 30% discount to the next raise. Mm-hmm. So yeah. A lot of people said that, you know, Rehobald, you know, you've got a situation here where, you know, you didn't have, Monty Bill said, oh, you raised a bit too much the last time. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys have been fully justified in this because they raised a bit too much so that when opportunities came up, they could do it. This is an opportunity. They're already drilling the well, and they're on the case to drill another 2 or 3 weeks. The best $750,000 they've ever spent providing it works, and they've been able to use that money very wisely. Assuming that this all comes in, it'll be a very big bonus for Rehobald and for United Oil and Gas and the others. Obviously, you've got to wait and see now, this is what's happened.
Yeah, well, do you know what? The market seems a bit confused. I checked the both guys there at Rehobald and United Oil and Gas, and they said, well, this is a bonus. We've still got the target, the primary target still to go. You know, the chance of success hasn't changed on that. And in fact, it encourages us as to, you know, the geology of the area there. They know it's quite prolific. Just proves it, you know. So they're more than pleased they found a secondary target. So, but the market seems a little bit confused, you know, when they got unexpected news, even if it's positive news, that they don't know how to react to it, you know? So there we are. But
absolutely right. So, you know, and we'll find out in the next couple of weeks as well.
Exactly, yeah. Not long to wait. Cool. Anything else, Malky?
A couple of brief ones. Notice that on Hurricane, which is waiting to tie up the well, and obviously on the Lancaster at the moment, it's nothing to do with that, but Spirit Energy, who they did a farm out with a few months ago, announced on Friday that they'd secured a rig. They will be drilling three wells in the Greater Warwick area obviously along with Hurricane. That's going to start in Q2 now. So, you know, I'd expect maybe April or so that we expect that to be underway. So apart from Hurricane having good news on, you know, as they wait to tie up in Lancaster, they've also got potentially good news as they start the farmed out drilling process in the Greater Warwick area, which is potentially very big indeed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I thought I better mention Bahamas Petroleum, because you know, I've always been quite cautious about Bahamas Petroleum, and it's always been right, actually, because up till now they've still never managed to find a farm out partner or get a rig booked, or they need to farm out partner, they need to raise some money, get a rig booked, and then start drilling. Now, there are two or three things worth noting here, which is probably potentially quite beneficial for Bahamas shareholders, which is, you know, they'll find it unusual coming from me. But first of all, that they got on Friday, they announced an extension period for their licenses offshore the Bahamas. So that runs now to the end of 2020, with an obligation to drill a well, obviously, but that that will depend on getting a farming partner. Now, the part about a farming partner is that they had somebody super major on the end of the hook last year who paid quite a lot of money for exclusivity and took a look at all the data and had took extra time and everything else. And then they walked away at the last minute, which was obviously infuriating for the company and for shareholders and everything else. Now, the interesting thing about this is that, you know, if you walk away, I suspect the company that walked away did that because they thought they might be able to come back when the license expired and go and speak to the government yourself and say, well, we'll have those.
Yeah.
Now that they've actually extended them for Bahamas, that's a potentially good bit of news that Bahamas really needed, because whether they go back to the same person and say, that trick didn't work, mate, you know, you're still going to have to join us to drill these things, or, you know, they tell me that there are several other people, you know, who were in the room at the time. So all of a sudden, you know, yeah, I wouldn't say Malky's suddenly gone massively positive on BHP, but BP, but Bahamas might be able to say, well, we're going to go back to one of those two people, three, there were half a dozen people who were looking at it, and say, right, somebody looked at it very carefully, they walked away, they thought they were being smart, turned out they weren't so smart as they thought, and find that they've got a partner after all. So, you know, when I spoke to the company on Friday, after I'd written the blog, as it happened, so I probably would have been a bit more positive in the blog if I'd known then what I know now. But I think that, you know, although it's still very high beta, it's suddenly got a bit less high beta.
Okay.
That makes any sense.
Yeah, no. I've had, in fact, they copied both of us in. There's someone on our Twitter sort of praising them. So he's obviously a shareholder there, Tony, but he'll be thankful of that news. So BPC is a ticker there. Excellent stuff. Is that it, Marky?
That's it for today.
Marvellous stuff. Well, there's plenty to go on. And we'll catch up next week, fella.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Europa Oil and Gas at EOG. At four, Highland Natural Resources, HNR. At three, Rehobold Resources, RBD, of course, Sachim's on the podcast. At two, Red Emperor Resources, RMP. And the number one most followed company is Bidstack Group, BIDS. And of course, tomorrow, Dirt Rally 2 launches officially, which is their second revenue stream for BIDS, BIDS, their native in-game advertisers in the gaming industry. It's a massive market and a lot bigger than most people think. It is bigger than the music and film industry combined, which is phenomenal, but underserved by ads. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Rehobold Resources, Coulter, South Oil Discovery and Forward Plan. At four, i3 Energy, £24 million junior loan notes facility. At three, it was another one from Rehobold. Same, but two RNS come up with that today. So that's Rehobold. At two, Talao Energy, production testing underway at Lesedi. Number one, most liked RNS, it was from Brian, of course, on the team there, at United Oil and Gas, Coulter Appraisal Well Results. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. By the way, you can see those lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, top 10 versions of those, and they change as well, so dynamic. So if one company starts getting liked or followed more than another company throughout the day, that list will change. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.